Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1637, air date January 9th, 2026.
Okay, good evening, everyone. It's Dr. Shiva Ayadure, and this is our town hall that we do every Thursdays at 8 p.m. Our team, with our leadership team, runs these meetings. We have warrior scholars, and we have a lot of guests who come also, and everyone here is invited. Every Thursday is 11 a.m. or at 8 p.m. You can RSVP at vashiva.com/orientation. And at these town halls, we discuss issues of the day. It's an opportunity to invite people, but most importantly, the Movement for Truth Freedom Health, and you can go to truthfreedomhealth.com to find out more, is really a movement to go at the heart of the root cause of how we as citizens, human beings, liberate ourselves from the various things we find ourselves in at any point in society. And one of the things that we teach, the core thing we teach, is that we need to move beyond the dialectics of the left and the right, pro and anti, and see things as they are. And we have created a way that anyone can do that. It's not anything religious. It's not something that's abstract. It's very real. It's based on engineering scientific principles. And if you really want to have some sense of real independence and accountability and responsibility, you have to learn these laws. They're fundamental laws of how the universe operates. They're scientific principles. Those in power know these principles. And these systems principles are used to manipulate people, to subjugate people. So we are creating the movement that should have been done many, many years ago, probably a century ago, to elevate people's consciousness. Ultimately, it's the individual raising their consciousness, taking accountability for themselves, and seeing the world as it is, and recognizing that though they may have been born into a world, you know, at some point in time, they have a choice at one point in life to accept things as they are and be enslaved by them, or say, let me learn how to change this world, become a sphere of influence. And once you learn that, or you get to that point, you start asking yourself fundamental questions. How do you do that? And how is fundamentally an engineering question. Everything in nature, all types of organisms are trying to manipulate their environments to advance themselves. And those that understand the laws of nature are able to do magic. And those that do not will always be enslaved. There are fundamental laws of nature. There are 9 principles, 5 basic ones and 4 advanced ones. And these comes out of engineering control system theory. The elites know how to use these principles. If you do not know these principles, you'll always end up being desperate, confused, not knowing what to do, but that is why our movement exists. So I hope those of you who are new, get involved, go to the Warrior Scholar course. We made it very, very accessible to anyone. And those of you who are veterans, you know, continue your learning and bring others into this. But one thing before, you know, I have a talk today, if we throw up the slide, I want to do a scientific talk today. I do a lot of political talks, a lot of tweeting, but fundamentally, you know, everyone in our movement is training to be a scientist, a fighter, as well as someone who takes care of their health. But we're going to talk about cytosol. I've talked about it, but I really want to get into the guts of it and give you a perspective. And the title of this talk is Computing the Infinite, Predicting What Works. And that's what we're going to talk about. And we're going to talk about what it means to go beyond AI. Everyone's using the term AI. 99% of the quote-unquote smart people who talk about AI, frankly, don't know what AI is. So I'm going to bring you up to speed as in the simplest language possible. What is AI? And why computational physics or computational models are not AI? Okay, so you're going to, and these are really two different worlds of how you can understand how you understand this thing called the universe around us. Before I do that, I want to make a couple of prefatory comments on some political issues, because I think it's important. You may have seen, I think, a couple of maybe this afternoon or earlier, or I think it was last night. Forget the, I think it was today, just to be clear, a woman who got shot by ICE. Okay, everyone probably saw this in Minneapolis. Everyone see this? And, you know, we'll probably, there's so many different camera angles. You know, from the camera angle I saw, it looks like she's actually turning her car to leave. And she got shot, I think, two or three times in the head. A woman of with three children. Now, opportunist groups who claim they're fighting the establishment have made comments. Well, we don't know. You know, we don't want to talk about whether we're opposed or against mass immigration, but this is a constitutional issue, and this poor woman's constitutional rights were violated. And this is sort of the flim-flam that people do, but let's get to the heart of this. The heart of this is this: the ICE guy who shot her is, you know, he's not a super wealthy guy. He's not, you know, he's a guy who's a paid mercenary. The woman is has her political views and is a US citizen. And she took the position that, you know, what ICE is doing is wrong. All right. The working class who observes something like this gets caught between the left and the right, and they lose all sight of the larger picture here. The larger picture is that Congress of the United States is the only organization that has the ability to control immigration policy. And they have avoided even addressing this issue. They don't want to solve the problem because poor labor, you know, poor paid labor serves the interests of the elites. So, on the one hand, every election cycle they'll talk about immigration, but there's really no interest to solve it among the Democrats or the Republicans. Because at the bottom line is that this quote unquote illegal immigrant labor or immigrant labor is actually utilized by the elites to generate more profit for themselves. And as a part of this, they must create divisiveness among working people, blacks versus whites, immigrant versus non-immigrant, and trying to spread a lot of hatred. Let me just give you this one interesting historical point of note. You know, we can talk about all religions and the positive negative aspects of all religions, but let me make this one point. It was the British who committed genocide of nearly 1 million Irish. The Irish were some of the, probably next to the South Indian laborers who came, the second group, which was in indentured servitude. And what's unfortunate, the British committed genocide, white people committed genocide on other white people. And what's fascinating is that when this was going on against the Irish, there was a brown-skinned sultan in of in Islam, right, in the Middle East, who actually sent money and food to help the Irish, and the British stopped those ships from coming in. So it's really interesting to hear to try to pit white people against dark skin or Muslim people when you look at the history of humanity, you have this example of whites on whites. Okay, this is really a class issue. And they don't want to address that issue, so they have to get people fighting and getting enraged at each other. And the broader issue with the immigrant issue is the people of Central America and South America have been one of the most subjugated people on this planet. The United States has installed the worst dictators in that region. And when those people rise up and fight, they're branded as all sorts of horrible things, right? But you can look at what happened in Chile, in Uruguay, in Cuba, all parts of Guatemala. The level of subjugation, the brutality of the abuse that took place by US imperialism upon those people is quite, I mean, it's beyond, when you go read the history, it's ruthless. And when those people have to leave their countries and they have to come here, all of that is forgotten. The amount of enrichment that was done at the behest of installing dictators in all those countries. So Congress is the only one that can solve immigration. They do not want to solve it. And if anything, this ICE nonsense has nothing to do with solving immigration. What it has to do with is dividing the American working class. That's what it's about. And sending fear that if you fuck with us, we will fuck you up. That's what it's about. It's about militancy on the ground. It has nothing to do with solving the immigration issue. So I just wanted to make those points. And the only way out of this is we, the people, understanding the dynamics, taking responsibility and building bottoms-up movements in a very methodical way so we can see through the divisiveness that gets caused by the left and the right. So our campaign for U.S. Senate has a very nice logo. It's the middle finger, and it's got the left and the right. You know, I don't know if you guys can find it and put it up, but it's got the left and the right who do not represent the middle being working people who keep getting divided among the left and the right. So this knowledge is what each one of you must learn, and each one of you must door-to-door educate your friends, family, etc. And that education must come from you. To the extent that I go out, you know, fight and do the battles I've done, and we've won where it matters. And it's not just cheerleading my efforts, but it's all of us cheerleading each other's and getting on the ground and doing these activities. And my run for U.S. Senate gives everyone the opportunity to mobilize people. And that's the activity we want to teach people. You being the agent of change, you looking at this world and wanting to change it. So I wanted to pound away at that. These are the central things we keep talking about, and we're going to keep talking about them over and over and over again. So with that background, the knowledge of system science can be used to understand anything in the universe, your body, society, you know, how to take care of your health, how to actually do science, how to actually do innovation. So in this realm, I want to talk about, in a deeper context, what is cytosol and the huge opportunity we have. And this is why I'm torn, because on the one hand, because of my own journey, I cannot walk away from fighting and exposing and mobilizing movements like we're doing. But on the other hand, that same energy that I bring to that comes from a deep sense of understanding or wanting to understand how the universe operates. So let me give you an example here. And this must be understood. There's two ways you can look at this universe. In a reductionist way, where you look at the parts or you look at the whole. Either you look at the parts or the whole. If you read System and Revolution and the teachings we have, looking at the parts is known as reductionism. Okay? You have a watch. The watch is the entire system, or you can go look at one particular gear, one particular, you know, leg of that watch, how it moves, or a screw, etc. Those are parts of it. But when you step away, all those interconnected parts give rise to the system, which is called a watch. Now, being able to have a language which describes that overall system versus the parts is system science. And that understanding did not come about until probably about, you know, 1920s. And 1950s, so this stuff is very new. A language, a scientific way to look at systems versus the parts. However, the field of health and most fields, particularly health, has been on a reductionist path for the last 150 years. So when it comes to finding cures for disease, it's been a reductionist model. So you look at this whole thing called the human body. By the way, this can be applied to your pets or animals or even plants. When you look at this whole system, the approach that has been taken is to look at a particular part of that system and see how you can manipulate that part without the recognition that part is connected to many other parts. So if you screw on with this, it may affect something over here, all right? So this reductionist notion came out of wartime medicine. And the Western medical system, and there's a good paper, maybe you can put up on the chat to people, which I wrote many years ago, traces back the history of modern medicine, and it goes to putting a soldier back on the battlefield. And Florence Nightingale, which I've talked about many times, was really the person who actually created the modern healthcare system. She watched soldiers dying on the battlefield, and she noticed more soldiers were dying when they came into things called hospitals. And that led to the recognition we have to build a healthcare system. But in those days, the whole goal was someone gets shot in the lungs, you got to fix their lungs up and put them back, or in the arm, etc. It was a very crisis management model, which means don't worry about everything else, fix that issue, put them back on the battlefield. Fix that issue, put them back on the battlefield. And that has continued till today. So someone has an injury, let's say, falls at work, something happens. A working class person. Well, they go to the doctor. The doctor wants to get them back on their feet. Workman's compensation for that working class person forces that worker to, in order to get time off, to follow the diktats of the doctor, which may be completely off, to give certain drugs and certain interventions, which have nothing to do with the long-term healing of that person, but to get them back to work. And this has devastating consequences. But when you look at the body as a whole, using a single bullet method or a reductionist method actually leads to more problems. That same reductionism has existed in the development of medicines. So over the last 150 years, the field of synthetic chemistry came. Synthetic chemistry. What does that mean? Well, we have about, today we have close to, and I'm going to go to the top level, 500,000 to 1 million natural compounds we've identified in nature. There's probably a lot more. So if you think about, there's probably the potential of 10 to the power of 38 compounds. But on this earth right now, we've identified about 1 million natural compounds. So you may want to write that down, 10 to the power of 6 compounds. So we have libraries, we know what they are, et cetera. And over the last 150 years, as of now, 5,000 synthetic compounds have been allowed by the FDA to be used as drugs. In order to create and get those 5,000 compounds allowed, you had to go through a process. And that's called the drug development process, which took about 150 years to develop. It starts with someone making a chemical in the lab, which, by the way, does not exist among those million. Then testing that chemical in a test tube, let's say of cancer cells or something, nerve cells, whatever the disease is, if it works there, you then go test it on animals, you kill animals, and that takes 6 years. And then if it works on animals, then you go to the FDA and you say, hey, I'd like to test this on humans. Then you test it on small groups of humans called phase one, more groups of humans called phase two and phase three. Okay, this takes 13 to 15 years, $5 billion to get this synthetic compound out to the market to be used in humans. And this is this process. And so the drug companies have access to around 60 to 100,000 compounds, synthetic compounds, and they test them. And as of now, 5,000 have been allowed. Okay. Some of them are generic drugs like ibuprofen, right? Ivermectin. You probably heard of these, fenbendazole. All right. So the drug development process, synthetic compounds, single molecule to find a target in the body that can cause a reaction to have potentially some benefit. But they don't forget that when it hits that one part of this very complex network system in your body, it may affect something else. Well, those are called side effects. But the pharmaceutical development model is not looking at the body as a whole. They're saying, oh, the guy has pain. We know if we suppress this molecule, he won't have pain. Let's give him some ibuprofen. Okay? Reductionism, single molecule. Okay? So the drug development effort has been single molecule. Out of the 5,000 drugs that the FDA allowed, 98 percent to 98.5% are single molecule drugs. There's one or two, four molecule drugs that were developed for HIV, but they're essentially one molecule hitting one target. All right. Now I'm going to bring up a spreadsheet, and I want you to start thinking about the numbers here. Imagine you have 1 million compounds in nature, okay? And I wanted to say, forget these drugs, or why don't we start combining, creating cocktails of natural compounds? Because if you look at some disease, it's not just one target, one thing you need to stop. You may need to stop this chemical over here, which causes cancer in your body, and this chemical, and this, and this. You may need to hit five, or let's say five different things have to be hit to really bring it down, okay? And the reason this is valuable is in the aspect of developing medicines. I've said this many times, the goal is how much of something do you give, right? Not are you taking it, how much? So when they build drugs, the entire scientific approach is you're trying to figure out dosage. How much of this chemical should we give to you, Barb, that will, let's say, lower the pain, but won't kill you, okay? That's called toxicity. So one is efficacy and one is toxicity, all right? So when they do all these clinical trials, these drug companies are trying to figure out how much should we give person X that will have some effect. What is the lethal dose that you shouldn't exceed? But if you go below this, it's not going to have any effect. That's why when you pick up a bottle of something, it'll say, take two tablets, 200 milligrams. That means 400 milligrams. It took them 15 years to figure that dosage, okay? And get it allowed by the FDA so it doesn't kill you. Essentially, that's the framework. But if you're just focusing on getting one thing to affect some disease, the reality is it's a very complex network. So people have started realizing, why are we just going after one drug for one point? What about if we did cocktails? So you can lower the dosage, hit multiple parts of a biological network, lower the dosage, less toxicity, greater effect. Okay? All right, that's called a drug cocktail. And this was the basis of Eastern medicine. When my grandmother mixed a lot of herbs, or people gave many different compounds, the goal of that was to create a cocktail, very low doses, micro doses, but it would hit multiple parts of the network and you alleviate a disease, no side effects. Food is medicine, because when you consume a meal, it's got millions of compounds, right? And that is having a modulatory effect. You're not taking a lot of one thing. All right. So drug development companies try to find one molecule to hit one target. It hits it, but it could have side effects. Does that make sense? All right. But what could happen if we got a million potential compounds? And let's say I wanted to create a five compound cocktail. How many potential combinations are there? Okay. What are the possibilities? So let's say you have five slots. In the first slot, I could do a million potential compounds, 10 to the power six, right? Then I could do in the next one, 999,000, right? Times 999 or 999,998. You see what I'm saying? It's probability. And in fact, let me bring up a spreadsheet. Or can someone bring up a spreadsheet? Let me bring up one. I just want you guys to understand this, the immensity of this possibility, okay? Let me bring it up here. So if you're trying to say, I want to find from nature the cure for Alzheimer's, and I'm going to take all the possible combinations of, I'm going to create a five drug cocktail, and I'm going to look at all the possibilities out there. How many potential combinations are there? Okay? And you'll see it's enormous. In fact, if you take all the 1 million potential compounds and you look at all the possible combinations, varying the dose of each combination. Okay. It turns out there that when you multiply it all out, it's more atoms than there are in the universe. That's how many combinations that are possible. All right. And by way of example, let me bring this up, and I'll do a five drug or five. Let's do a combination of five here. Let's say I got to zoom here a little bit so it makes it easy for you guys. Okay. So let's do this way. Sure. Can I share my screen here? The screen rights. Okay. So if you see my screen here, we're going to do the following. Let's say I have, let's say compound one. Okay. Compound two. Compound. I'm going to do a cocktail of five drugs, or let's say call them compounds. Okay. So if there's a million compounds in the universe, in the first slot, you can put 1 million. Okay. Possibilities. In the second slot, we can put 999,999, because we're not going to use ones. The next slot, we can put 999,998, and so on, right? This is basically probability combinations. I'm sorry. Okay. So these are all, so if you multiply this out, what do you get? You get this times this times this times this times this times this. All right. So it's 9.99 times 10 to the power of 29. Okay. Five drugs. So that means nine, or roughly 10 to the power of 29, 10 with 29 zeros after it. That's how many potential combinations there are. Okay. So that means among those one out of those 10 to the power of 29 combinations, there could be many combinations that cures cancer. Another group that cures Alzheimer's. Okay. Natural compounds. Drug companies don't want to do this. I mean, it's too complicated. So what do? They say, I'm just going to find one compound that hits this. It may cause other shit, but oh well, we'll take out the ads on TV and tell you if you eat this, your ear may fall off. You may start drooling. Your left leg may start wavering all day. And, you know, your eye may flicker. But that's okay. Whatever, right? But there could be combinations out there which modulate everything. This is only a five-drug cocktail. Imagine if you do 10 or 20, okay? You see how the numbers grow. And I'm just looking at assuming all of these drugs are the same dose. If you say each drug or compound has 10 different doses, you have to add another zero to each one of these, okay? It's enormous. But that means we have the possibility in nature of infinite combinations. If we can find those right combinations, put them together. And that's what these in traditional medicines, they did. They said, I'm going to mix this herb, that herb, that herb, put it together, and I'll solve this. Now, the problem is modern medicine has no way to validate that, right? Because if you wanted to validate, if you wanted to go to that drug development cycle and create a combination like this, you'd have to test, even if you did a couple of dosages, you'd have to kill so many animals, right? Because you have to test all the combinations to get it through the FDA. So what do? Right? So people don't want to deal with this problem. In fact, if you go get a bottle of vitamins, I don't know, this vitamin is good for arthritis. And if you read all the compounds in there and you go to that vitamin company and you say, well, how did you decide to put this 10 milligrams of this 20 milligrams? They'll just say, they don't have an answer. Trust us, we're better than pharma. Well, how'd you decide to put this? Well, you got to just trust us. So in some ways, they're worse than pharma because they don't have to do any testing, but they may have Jennifer Aniston promoting it. And you say, oh, she's had enough plastic surgery. She looks good. So I'm going to buy that. Okay. All right. Then recently, AI has come in. AI says, okay, we're going to do AI. And since no one knows AI is cool, people are funding these companies, but they're still trying to find one compound for one target. It's AI lipstick and rouge on like an old dog, okay? So nothing has fundamentally changed, okay? So, all right, so what is cytosol? So you got everyone got the background? The real issue is nature has combinations that if we can put them together, we can have source of solving diseases in many ways. But pharma is all about organic synthetic chemistry, one compound, one location. It can't handle this thing. Okay? So that's the big picture. So you guys know I have had a deep interest in traditional medicines, watching traditional systems of medicine combine things. And the issue was, how do you do this? Well, in traditional medicine, they just said, well, this is the way it is. Well, how did you? Well, we just did this for the last 50 years or 1,000 years. My grandmother gave it to my grandmother, who gave it to you, right? And in historically, women were the shamans, and it was passed on. And a woman had many different combinations that she'd have in her household. Someone got a headache, oh, you take this. Someone got a stomachache, you take this, right? And it was passed on. And over the years, no one could validate these combinations. It's just like, trust us. All right. So now imagine that you see the body as a complex system, and which is made of many, many different chemical reactions, and we can actually map them. Take every chemical reaction and compute it on the computer, put it all together. Then what you can do is you can start looking at combinations of compounds, and you can compute actually how much you should give of this and this and this and this to have effect on all these multiple parts of a system which affects, let's say, a particular disease. That is what cytosol can do. Okay? Cytosol computes biology. So you over here, you have computational systems and you have AI. AI doesn't compute. What AI does is you give it enough data and it's making correlation links among a bunch of disparate pieces of knowledge. And then it comes to an answer. But if you ask it how you came to this answer, it can't explain it. It's a black box. Okay, that's over here. It's called large language models. Over here, you have computational models like cytosol. We can actually tell you, oh, if you took this and this, why it would give this output. This is computational physics. This is basically a black box. That's AI. AI does not compute. It basically correlates. It's statistical. So to sort of make this a little more, and everyone's welcome, because I spent a lot of time over Christmas really updating for educational purposes, to really for you to understand the immensity of this opportunity we've created. So if you go to the cytosol site, it says computing the infinite, predicting what works. And it goes to this point. There are over nearly 1 million known natural compounds and over 4,000 FDA-approved drugs. When these compounds are combined across different doses, the number of possible combination grows beyond the number of atoms in the observable universe. Within these combinations likely exist solutions for disease, longevity, and healthier living. However, the overwhelming complexity is why traditional drug discovery focused on single compounds using animal testing, leaving most potential solutions unexplored. So cytosol is a computational platform that makes it possible to model, to compute, and understand biology. And to integrate these pathways, cytosol predicts how compounds interact inside living systems, thereby enabling the discovery of safe and synergistic combinations. So that's what cytosol does. We've created a factory of sorts that can take compounds and we can actually find out how they work. Okay? So that's what cytosol is. It's an engine. It's an engine to compute. Computing biology versus trial and error. And in fact, the ancients, that's what they did. They did trial and error. They went into the woods. One guy ate this and another guy ate this. One guy died. The other guy was fine. One guy suddenly you know, grew a bunch of chest hair, and they said, oh, that's good for growing chest hair. Another guy, you know, cured his eczema, right? Whatever. So it was done by trial and error, and people figured out these combinations. But with cytosol, we don't have to do trial and error. We can predict. So over the last 10 to 15 years, in the middle of doing the political stuff, in the middle of fighting, filing lawsuits, we have still been a scientist doing cytosol. And in that realm, we have created an entire new process, completely different than the old drug delivery model. And that process looks like this, okay? That process says, if we're gonna solve any disease, we need to start with an architecture of the disease. Let's really understand the whole architecture. Then we're gonna go get it published, because we want the establishment to attack us, because we want to find out because if we don't publish it and expose it, and this is what all the wannabe people want to do medical freedom do. They say, oh yeah, the medical establishment sucks. You know, I think there's these nanobots in dark field microscopy. Well, can we all see it together? Can we replicate the experiment? And they go, dumb. So if we want to compete, you have to be able to peer review it, publish it, and have other people be able to replicate it. Then we model the architecture, we use it for screening, we discover, and we license. So we have created a completely new process. Now, pharmaceutical model took 150 years. It took us 15 years, a lot of hard work to do this. And what we've done is we have, if you go to the site, we have all the people that, the biggest names in the world who've used our architecture. And many of these are establishment swarm creatures. But it's great because they've used us and now they can't go back. So we've proved all the different people who've used us to understand these are basically test customers we wanted to use to show that we could play on their own playing field, but we have a whole new process. And so that's where we're at. We have created a completely new paradigm to find combinations of compounds from nature that work. And it's been a long process. And if you guys go, when you have a chance to go in here, you'll see the many, many different areas we've already done this with, osteoarthritis, ALS, stem cells. And this is what the last decade and a half has been. You know, with a few people, with a whole new approach, we have done more work going after all of these diseases than all the biggest institutions on the planet. And at best, you know, we raised around $4 million. They've raised $4 trillion, okay? So we have a completely different approach that's faster, cheaper, better, and can bring great rewards to humanity. But fundamentally, what we're doing is going at this big problem like I just shared with you here, which is there is a ton, infinite supply. Nature is bountiful. It's not just 60,000 synthetic compounds, infinite combinations. And cytosol allows us to probe infinity. That's why we called it computing infinity. And find out which combinations are possible. So again, just like I said, running for office, I'm here, but it's a collective effort. Others got to go do the work, talk to people to get me elected. Same with cytosol. It's taken us a ton of effort to build this infrastructure, but everyone here can be part of the solution now. Every one of those diseases out there, we can do with cytosol things faster and cheaper and better. In the ALS case, for example, some of you may know, we published a major research paper on ALS. We're working with an individual who has ALS, and he's had it for about 3 years. People have put tens of billions into ALS. Our paper discovered three new cells that those papers never even had. And it was pretty controversial, but we were able to defend ourselves. But in the last 2 months, and we haven't published this yet, we have found that when we did the modeling of ALS, we found toxins in the environment, glyphosate, Roundup, chlorpyrifos. When we put it into our models, it created, So when people have ALS, one of the things they have is a protein called CHOP is high in their systems. They have calcium influx. Well, when we, in our models of ALS, put in glyphosate, it did the exact same effect. And in fact, golfers get three times more ALS than normal people. And there's research now showing that if you live near a golf course or near a vineyard, 125% chance more of getting Parkinson's. So is this a disease or is it a neurotoxin? And again, that's what we've done. So from a medical freedom standpoint, cytosolve can do many things, but it can be used as a vehicle to expose stuff. Now, Booby fucking Kennedy knows about cytosolve since 2020, and he attacks cytosolve. Now he's talking about eliminating animal testing. Well, we've been doing that. Okay? So he literally watches what we do, mirrors it, and throws a bunch of breadcrumbs to people for MAHA. Meanwhile, they are going in, invading another country, shooting people on the streets. So MAHA has become like a joke. While you're attacking US citizens, going after immigrants, doing the most vile things, you're throwing some crumbs to people. That's not what our movement is. Our movement is fully integrated. We saved a lot of people's lives during COVID, hundreds of millions of people's lives. We have infrastructure, and don't expect Booby fucking Kennedy to help us in any way. But cytosolve is that revolutionary infrastructure. And just like when you have a revolutionary solution like Truth, Freedom, Health, Foundation Systems, we have to go do it. So I just want to let you know, if you didn't know what cytosolve is doing, it's computing biology. AI is not doing that. AI has been around since 1960. It's the same old shit of just, it's basically a big calculator in the cloud. And with NVIDIA, you can do them faster. But it's not computing anything. It's not predicting. That takes computational physics. AIs can be a front end to ours. I mean, you could think about putting an AI front end to ours. So, Marianne, you could say, hey, I have these five drugs. What is it going to do to me? How much am I? And our engine can come back and say, Marianne, if you take 20 milligrams of this and 30 of this and 40 of this, it's going to cause this. The average 82-year-old is now on 12 drugs in the United States. No one knows what the combinations are. Cytosolve can help those people. So, a company called Xaira, Xaira, out there. I was on a plane ride about 30 days ago. The guy sitting next to me was the head of a big lab automation company. He said, "Oh my God, your cytosolve is amazing." He goes, "I just went and helped this company out. They raised $1 billion in funding. Okay? They have no software," he said. I think what he's saying is true. "In one, they have no products, no revenue. In fact, their company, I believe, the CEO is a former president of Stanford who had to leave because there were allegations of plagiarism on him." Okay? Professor. So this is how the big guys do it. They know AI is a big buzzword, so they put together a new AI pharma company, but it's the same old shit. They raise $1 billion, they'll do some quasi stuff and flip it to someone else. But we have the real stuff. You say that we have real products, we have real customers, real infrastructure. And because we're not part of that club, the likelihood of those people funding us is very low. But we actually have the solution. So that's why this over the Christmas break, I wanted all you guys to understand that the foundations of systems science, when you get into that and you're at that kernel, you get many things that come from that. Truth, Freedom, Health, the movement, systems health, clean food certified, right? Cytosolve. We create these amazing solutions, but those in power don't want real solutions. They're reductionists. They want to create problems. We want to solve problems. They want to have immigrants fighting against US citizens, right? So it's up to us, guys. We have solutions. And real solutions will not get out by those in power. We have to push them out there. But I want to let you know that, we can truly have a golden age But it's not going to come from fucking Trump or Biden or Kennedy or these bozos. They're just throwing crumbs to the masses. So that's what Cytosolve is. We're computing infinity. We can figure out if a product works. If you know some guy who's making, there are companies who make nutritional products, you should go to them and say, hey, how do I know your product works? Just ask him that and see what he says. You have all this stuff you're putting in. Can you give me some why? Like, can you prove to me why this works? We can with anything we make. I can tell you where apigenin hits and hesperidin hits. We tell you that because we run it through our engine. So this is a way to make people honest. The young people right now, the latest data shows young people want honesty. They don't care about celebrity marketing. They want to know if they're going to buy something. In fact, young people pay $240 more per month for a set of supplements if they know it's actually scientific evidence it works. So all of you people out there who are claiming your products or big companies, small companies, we can help you figure out if your stuff works. So Cytosol will disrupt the entire marketplace. Those people want to use us. We'll deliver good products. Those people want to bullshit people are going to go out of business. So, and that's a good thing. So we have a disruptive solution here, and disruptive solutions do not get out there without disruptive methods, you know? And that's why you need to get them up bottoms up. So I'll take on questions. I didn't want to do a full presentation of Cytosol, but I just wanted, the key takeaways are AI is really large language models. It's not doing computation. It's just a natural language front end. It's been around since 1960. The chips have made it faster. Over here is computational physics, which is actually predicting events, physical events. That's what we're doing. Okay? And the net of it is there are more combinations of natural compounds than all the atoms in the universe. And in order to find from that infinite supply we have things that work, you need Cytosol. We're the only one that can do this on this planet. And that was what the base of my PhD was. And in the hype of AI, they're the VCs and the investment bankers. They're just putting money into companies. They don't really care to solve anything. They build companies up and they flip them. And then it was like the dot-com bust, right? Bunch of fake companies. No revenue, nothing, just hype, and everything crashed and lost 99% of its value. So we got a huge opportunity. So I just wanted to let you know that the approach we're doing in my sharing this with you is engaging all of you to understand this at a very fundamental level. We'll take some questions. So I want you to really understand, you know, AI, computational physics, the immense possibility we have and the unique power of what we created with Cytosol.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Shiva. And to respect Dr. Shiva's time, everybody, with the Q&A, please write your questions clearly in the chat. Do not raise your hand. We're only going to be taking questions that you put in the chat so that you make sure that you formulate what you want to ask and don't ramble. And to do that, message any co-host or Dr. Shiva. All you do is hit on the new chat icon and a list will drop down of the co-hosts. Okay. So we'll give a couple of minutes so that you can formulate a question for Dr. Shiva.
And while you're thinking about, there's a paper we just published on stem cells. So stem cells are cells in your body that can become any kind of cell. You know, every cell in your body has a DNA within that cell to be the entire you. But when your body got created, you know, at the time of your the egg and the sperm meeting and all these different cells, one of the fascinating things in biology is a stem cell can become any other kind of cell. So what people are now doing is doing infusions of stem cells for people with injuries, anti-aging treatments. And so we wrote, again, a very seminal paper, got published in Oxford University Press, on looking at mesenchymal stem cells. And the idea is your body naturally has stem cells. And what can you do to support those stem cells with other nutrients? So, in order to do that, we had to first of all map out how stem cells work, all their interaction, what we call that systems architecture. So, we recently just did that. I think I can, as you guys are thinking of questions, if you go to our research pipeline, this was just published. Wrong one. This was just published recently. So, if I go here, this is the latest one. You can see the complexity of this process and the fact that we were the first ones to map all of this out, how stem cells form and the systems architecture of stem cells. And then we mapped out all the entire wiring diagram of sorts of how stem cells work together, all the different components. So this is what we call a systems architecture. Again, a completely new approach. And now, if we get support, we can start figuring out how these natural processes can be accentuated. So that's just the latest stuff we just did. And we have four papers coming out on lung, by the way. Crystal wanted me to do, I'll tell you one thing, the lungs, I think I'm going to do a whole series on this. I would say if there is one subsystem in your body that's the most important, it's breathing, right? Breathing is like pretty much everything. All the great religions talk about breath, right? Breath is where life begins. And as you study longevity, you find out that the capacity of someone's ability to breathe is a number one indicator of their health. And if you do all the right things to breathe well, you actually will live a very long life because breathing is pretty much it. And so we have four papers coming out on lungs that I was in the middle of working on when I had my own accident in my house where I fell and my lungs were affected. So some very interesting coincidence of the universe. Here I am about to publish four papers on lungs and I hurt my lungs. And it's been a very interesting process seeing how fucked up the medical establishment is in treating that. And but much more universally, if we take care of our lungs, most people, as you age, pneumonia, right? Which I believe is being caused by other things. But I'm going to do a lot of focus. Like if you had to say, out of 100 things in life, what's the one thing you should focus on? Your lungs. And if you can do that and you can breathe well, because from our system science perspective, the lungs have transport, conversion, and storage. They move air, they convert, right? The gas exchange, and they're a vessel. And next to the brain, if you think about it, which is protected by the skull, your lungs are protected by this entire rib cage. So evolutionary-wise, evolution knew, or if you believe in grand design or God, that you got to protect the lungs. Right in the Bible, it says life began when breath first came. So I am going to probably write a small book on this, but come up with a set of protocols. And you find out those protocols, you do those protocols, they're just a good way of living life. Exercise, breathing, walking, right? Doing a certain amount of nutrients that support that, right? Postural drainage, certain yoga postures, meditation to relax. There's a whole bunch of things that if you do those, they're all for living a long life anyway. So I'm going to be doing that because I think it can benefit in a very practical way. But we have four papers coming out on lungs. Again, all of these are being done through our own self-support. There's no government agency that's supporting us. We do it on our own. World-class papers. So, and I know everyone here knows somebody who had a lung issue. Just think about it. When they actually passed on, it was something typically do with something to do with their breath being affected by and large. Okay, let's take some questions here. Suresh has posted a Facebook. Sylvia Jones said, Dr. Shiva, can you talk on plasma healing? Thank you. Can AI cure me? So let's talk. Recently I got a interesting contact. So plasma is one of the states of matter. It's, highly ionized particles. So you have gas, liquid, solid, and you have plasma. So these guys called me up and they said they had a plasma device, and they said it can cure every disease. And I said, okay, we can do a, we put together a proposal for them with CytoSolve. Anyway, and I said, look, we want to do stuff in a very methodical way because we just don't want to do schlock science. So we said, why don't we see if your plasma device affects joint health? We put together a proposal. And the guy who was owning this company said, well, we'd really like you to just do it for lung health and put your name on it. And he was going to give us quite a bit of money, about a quarter of a million bucks. And I said, look, I can't do that because we haven't published our lung papers. I could do that, but let's do it on joint health. Anyway, for some reason, he whacked out, didn't want to do it. And we came up with a solid proposal. So yeah, we'd like to do stuff, but anything we do at a seriously, truly at a high level of scientific integrity. And this happens to me a lot. During the election integrity stuff, a guy tried to bribe me so I wouldn't expose a guy who's doing fake election integrity with Mike Lindell. And he sent me, this was in Arizona, he sent me a check in my bank account for 50K and we sent it back. So anyway, so yeah, we'd like to do stuff. There's so many different modalities. But the problem is the woo-woo people, and you have these people running around saying shit, but they're actually hurting the actual movement because they just say stuff and they can't back anything up. But with CytoSolve, we can back stuff up. So yeah, we can do stuff on plasma. Can AI cure me? Well, what AI can do, it can look at the broad set of data that it's given and find correlations between them. So to that extent, AI is quite powerful. I took my dog, Sequoia's here. She has a she had an eye infect, some eye thing going on. Okay. So took her to the stupid vet, and the vet did this test, that test, and gave her a hoodie to wear, one of those hoods. This went on for months. And I was traveling, so a friend of ours was helping take care of the dog. Anyway, so I went in and the doctor said, oh, let's put her on prednisone, which is, they give prednisone for fucking everything. Okay? Everything is prednisone. And by the way, just as a side note, vitamin D was used from the 1900s all the way to 1940 at a very high dose, very powerful. In 1940 is when prednisone comes out. And that same, around the same year prednisone came out, is when they found a paper saying vitamin D can hurt you. And it was based on one infant child getting hurt in England taking some high dose. So after that, prednisone goes up, and prednisone is a corticosteroid. And vitamin D, by the way, is also a hormone. Anyway, so I said, look, I don't want to do anything more with you. And I went on to the AI and I took a picture of Sequoia's eye. And the AI came back and it was pretty cool. It said, your dog doesn't have. And by the way, doctors, everything's autoimmune. You heard that? Oh, it's an autoimmune reaction. Well, what the fuck causes autoimmune? It's an allergy, stress, right? Induced oxidative stress. But they don't want to talk about the end. Oh, it's autoimmune. Take prednisone. So the AI said your dog has a zinc ability not to process zinc. And it occurs with those northern breeds of dogs, the Malamutes, the Huskies. It said just increase her zinc intake and make sure she's on a grain-free diet. Okay? Now, I'm telling you, doctors are fucking stupid. I hate to say that, or they've been made stupid of the way that they're taught and contained. They're not like stupid people. The system makes them stupid. So they have no ability. That dog is, whatever treatment they give to a Native American dog, which has wolf in it, they'll give to a fucking poodle, which they'll give to a bulldog. They don't understand these breeds are different, human beings are different, and they don't see things as they are. You see, they don't take a systems approach. So to that extent, AI can point you in that direction. But will it tell me how much zinc I should give her? No. That you need computational stuff. That's cytosolve. Okay? So they can work together. It's pretty, it's yeah. So I think we're going to head into a world where the future is you'll work with systems like cytosolve and AI. You'll say, oh, you know, I have an issue with my eye. It'll say, take a picture of your eye. And it'll say, oh, Doris, go get these tests done. And you do them on your own. You order your own lab tests. You get them, give it back to the AI in cytosolve. It'll say, now do this. Why do you need the doctor? That's where we're going to move to. Why do you need these doctors if they cannot value add something beyond that? And I think it's going to be a very, very interesting world. Okay. So, Tracy Peters, there's some buzz around cocoa flavonoids and flavonoids healing, turning on our cells. All right. So, to anyone finding this anecdotal piece, we have a framework to do that. I'll give you an example. A very close friend of mine, Jim, his father, his uncle, his brothers, whatever, his whole family has had heart disease. So he's freaked out over cholesterol, which is another issue, the whole cholesterol scam. Okay. But nonetheless, Jim went to his cardiologist and they were going to put him on a statin. And he had, for the last 5 months, found six herbs that he took. And it brought his LDL level down by 50% from like 150 down to 75. And his doctor was like, what the fuck did you do? He goes, oh, I took these things. And she goes, just keep taking them. But again, this is a different issue. I don't want to say whether lowering LDL is better. The evidence shows that high LDL people actually live longer. Anyway, so here's an idea for all of you guys. You'll find people who said, you know, I took this, this, and this. My doctor said this, the medical establishment sucks, right? And then they just sort of flail on social media talking about that. Well, we can actually take all their energy and give them a methodical way to find truth. So in Jim's case, we're going to do a case of one write up on what occurred to him. Then we're going to use cytosolve to have the molecular mechanisms of plaque development. And then we're going to take his six herbs compounds and put it in. And we're going to see if we get a lowering of LDL computationally, you see? And we have his physical evidence. Then the next step we'll do, if all this is true, I'll come on social media. We'll have Jim here. And we're going to invite 50 other people to say, would you like to be part of an IRB, an institutional review board, that we will work with 50 of you? We'll give you this combination, see if it does the same thing. Now, if we can do that, this is 10 times faster and better than the old phase one, phase two, phase three, and we can go to market. Okay? So we're going to use cytosolve as a weapon, true weapon for medical freedom, truth, freedom, health. Fuck the FDA, fuck these guys. We should go to war against them in some ways. But cytosolve can help us do that in a very methodical, professional way versus just flailing out there and saying, oh, the medical establishment sucks. We know they suck, but how are you going to fight them? We have cytosolve as a weapon to fight them, completely separate. So if you know people like Tracy said, oh, someone took, you know, this and this and this, and then they had this and it went away, we can put a research project around that. Okay. Ryan says, do you have any of your past research on lupus online? I'd like to start using cytosolve. Yeah. So Ryan, we spent 5 years. This is one of the things because of our resources. We actually finished all the research on lupus. We did it in conjunction with the leading people at Weill Cornell Medicine. And we're going to publish it. But we know all the molecular pathways of lupus. It's unpublished stuff. So phase one, phase two will be done shortly. And then we need capital to go put some engineer on it to model it. And then we can start looking at it. Let me just tell you guys one thing. One of the biggest triggers of all disease is emotional stress. And stress, you know, the relation between an emotion and how it affects the body at the biochemical level, Eastern systems of medicine were aware of this, but Western systems of medicine don't put enough attention on it at all. So we're doing some very cool research to show how a particular emotion, sadness, worry, anger, joy, how it literally affects particular chemical pathways. But many of these autoimmune diseases, lupus, you have to really look at stressors, you know, physical stressors, emotional stressors, environmental stressors. Let's see, Crystal has a question. Crystal says, I appreciate you mentioning the dot-com bust. I'm certain the same thing will happen with AI. There's a huge push online that people can make money during this time using AI or investing in it. However, there's something everyday, is there something everyday person can do to make money during this time without being a huge risk? Okay, so let's go to the dot-com era. During the dot-com era, I remember this well because we were one of the pioneers in it. We created some of the earliest dot-com sites, but we weren't a dot-com company. What did the dot-com era really mean? The dot-com era, the truth of it was this. The internet had existed prior to 1993, for 30 years before that, which means the internet of computers connected together. What happened in 1993 was people at the University of, was it Chicago? I forget where it was. These guys created the internet exists. They created a front end on top of the internet where you could use your mouse and point and click at a link and it would take you somewhere. That was called HTTP, okay, hypertext protocol. All right, so that made this internet accessible to the average human, okay? That's what happened in 1993. A big front page article in the New York Times, people said, wow, it's gonna be pretty cool. People started creating web pages. You could point and click. That was the beginning of the World Wide Web, okay? So then people realized, wow, more and more people can point and click and look up information. And some people just created these fake dot-com companies, just putting random shit online. And they got funding for it. Because the investors over here, it's like someone created the railroad and they go, wow, and they start just investing in any random thing related to railroad. But there were certain companies which created real infrastructure to take advantage of this emerging thing called the World Wide Web and really build a real business. Amazon was one of those companies. JCPenney could have done that, but they didn't, right? Other people built wacky websites. So at the height of the dot-com boom in 2002, there were 90% of the whack job, stupid shit. And there were a few companies like the company I built, Echo Mail. We were actually processing email, okay? And, you know, there was a set of them, Cisco, et cetera. So when the dot-com hammer came down, all the shit got wiped out, but real companies survived. Okay, if you take that to the AI world, what is AI? Okay, AI has existed since 1960, 70. I have the three earliest patents in AI. And AI is basically taking relationships between objects or words and being able to connect them together and find how one relates to another with a natural language front end, okay? So anyway, this has existed. With the computing power now, you can just do it at scale. So now we have ChatGPT, which is did, I think, $10 billion in revenue last year on subscription revenue. You pay $20 a month. So they're valued now at 80 times revenue, about $800 billion. I don't know what Gemini did, which is a Google, or what's the other one? Grok. So you have these AI infrastructures, and then there's all these other things popping out of it. So what I think is going to happen is eventually AI is going to be a layer upon which people are going to build apps, new kinds of specific applications. And that, I think, could be a real exciting endeavor. And then AI, after a while, is going to become a commodity because it's pretty easy to replicate. And AI will be the front end that you talk to back-end systems, which is what Cytosolv is doing. So right now, money trillions of dollars is going into fund all these different AI companies. From the investment standpoint, they just need a few to do really well, like the guys who invested in Google, right? So the venture capitalists, Crystal, are just putting money into a bunch of things. But I believe the companies that are going to be of real service using AI are things that essentially enhance people's health, well-being. But AI is going to eliminate a significant amount of jobs that are menial jobs. You see, jobs where, so if you have 100 lawyers in a law firm, maybe there are five guys who are really the smart guys who do strategy. The other 95 guys are just like crunching paper. The other 95 guys will be replaced by AI. That's what's going to happen. Okay. Nicholas, for example, you guys were working on a writ of mandamus, right? You use one of the tools to help you generate that, right? You avoided a lawyer. So there's going to be people, even in software engineering, who are really good engineers, and the other guys who are just like doing dumb shit stuff, they're all going to be gone. So I think, you know, those companies or organizations that are going to leverage AI to do things faster and cheaper, I think those are probably valuable companies like the equivalent of Amazon to invest in, Crystal. But you have to do some research. Let's go to Nicholas Lupo says, Jordan Loft says, my question is, how could Cytosolv help cure dementia? Okay. So when you look at any disease, Jordan, in our systems approach, you just said, you use this word dementia. What is dementia? Well, dementia ultimately is a set of molecular mechanisms. Think of them as little motors. There's different of these molecular mechanisms that they're interconnected. When one or two of them or three of them go off, you get dementia. So what we do at Cytosolv is we identify all that molecular machinery. Okay, we say these are the five molecular components of dementia. So the way Cytosolv is going to help cure that is one of them could be inflammation being caused in the body, causes dementia. Another one could be not enough fatty acids, fats. Most brain issues are people are not eating enough fat. Okay? And I can talk about why. So you go down this thing, you find out these are the five things that lead to dementia. But you find out some of those five things also lead to Parkinson's. And some of those five things also lead to ALS and so on. So when you open up the hood, you find out there's certain molecular machinery which are common across all these diseases. So if we can go hit that molecular machinery and make sure it's well, you get three for the price of one. So that's how Cytosolv does it. We look at the mechanisms. All right. If you want me to make this a little more clear, when I shared with you the, I think I can, let me share just to be very specific about this, what I mean by this. Let's go on here. Okay, here we go. What I mean by this is if we go here and we look at, if we look at, for example, this disease called ALS, okay? When I mean molecular mechanisms, I mean this, okay? So here's ALS, and ALS is caused by three biological processes, neuroinflammation, muscle atrophy, and neurodegeneration. And under the hood are these pathways, six pathways which are related to neurodegeneration, five here and two here. So these are the pathways that Cytosolv focuses on once we understand what the pathways are. So for dementia, we can map that out. And then we can start understanding those pathways and finding things that support that. Next, Joanne Feetzer says, as an integrative oncologist, I spend hours examining and evaluating patients' genetics and biomarkers to determine natural substance will be effective. Will Cytosolv be personalized in combination by including biomarkers of the patient? Yeah, so what we could do is we did this years ago in a disease called neuromyelitis optica, where people get it's unfortunately sometimes people confuse it with MS. But yeah, if the data's there, we can create what's called the digital twin for that individual. Let's go to Suresh again. He says, Sylvia Jones says, how can one involve local organic sustainable farming and farmers into working with software system? Thank you. Yeah. So Sylvia, one of the things we've done, I don't know if Jolanta's here, but for clean food movement, we have now created a seal to create clean farms and clean gardens. Okay. So those farmers, we can certify them as clean. And we're working with a partner company. People can send a little bit of their soil and we'll actually analyze it. And then we can help them. So that's one way a farmers can help, or we can help farmers. Suresh, Sylvia Jones, my dad is 81 years old, recommended him the wearables. What's your view on those? How would people like my dad? So look, the wearables are actually pretty cool, depending on which ones you get. The Apple Watch has a bunch of stuff on it, can measure your respiration, bunch of things. But eventually these wearables will be able to measure a lot of stuff. That data will go into some platform. It'll get analyzed. And in real time, that's where we're going to. You'll be in control of your health as long as you have access to your data. Okay. This is where the politics comes in. But if you can, you'll be able to say, this is where I'm at today. These are the foods that I ate. What should I do now? And you're going to be constantly, as we talk about in systems health, right? Constantly having your goal and adjusting inputs to get to your source, to what you want to get to. Someone else on YouTube says, has CytoSolve found anything about MS? So, long question. As I mentioned, MS, a lot of these neurodegenerative diseases have to do with, in my view, a lot of them have to do with deficiencies. There's a very close link between MS and B12, for example. Not enough getting enough B12, for example. But we've actually done the pathways in this area. But again, we do so much work, and this is why I wanted to do this because we want to take CytoSolve very large, get funding for all these things, so we can actually take MS all the way. And it takes about 18 months to take any disease on and take it down the pipeline. Let's go to Barbara Hurd. Says Anya from Massachusetts says, should there be a focus on making keeping a cell's mitochondria healthy? How does one do that? Inflammation and particular illnesses is attributable to damaged mitochondria. Okay, so when it comes to aging, there's various factors affecting aging. Mitochondrial health is one of them. It's really the powerhouse, power plant in every cell. So yeah, so there's multiple things, Anya, that affect the mitochondrial health, and this is a very cool area of research where the mitochondria itself can be mapped out. Inflammation, is obviously a thing that affects many diseases. For example, if you look at neuroinflammation, that affects many of the brain issues. In our product NV25, there's a chemical in there called apigenin, which comes from chamomile flowers. It's not only good for pain, but it's also one of the few chemicals that passes a blood-brain barrier. So it'll have a neuroprotective effect too. So, yes, we could definitely do mitochondria. Look, guys, we can do anything. The reason I wanted to again do this is we're looking for people who want to go take that area on, be the project managers, get us funding so we could go put people in place to do it. Valentina says, has CytoSolve looked at the effectiveness of IV therapy? Or what are your thoughts about IV therapy? I think you mean IV therapy where you're delivering nutrients through IV. I think certain of them can be very valuable. But again, it would be nice to do efficacy research to conclusively, I give you an example, glutathione IV. The MDs, the doctors will say, well, we don't really know if it works. Okay. We do know that glutathione increase does affect pathways of oxidative stress. But the issue is, do you take the upstream chemicals like NAC, or does glutathione help directly? These are areas that with cytosol we can do research and then back it up with supporting, a clinical test. So there are certain things that if you try to take glutathione in your gut, it gets broken up. Certain things may be better IV, but then you got to be careful because when you're avoiding natural ways of your body processing stuff, or long term, what's the benefit of that? So I think in crisis situations where your body's under serious attack, compromise, I think IV therapy can be helpful. But again, it's a case-by-case standpoint of what's being used. Next one is, and I'll take two more. RFK, aka Booby, created an upside-down food pyramid. Have you seen it? What is your opinion? Thank you. Well, what's really interesting is I find all these grifters talking about health, but I hope as they're talking about their so-called health recommendations, they should also reveal how much plastic surgery they're all getting and how much TRT they're taking. Because it's sort of duplicitous. Because Booby Kennedy, I know where he lives in Malibu. Okay. He has access to the best foods. He should reveal what other drugs he's on. Don't you think so? I think all these guys should talk about all the drugs he's taking right now and how often he gets testosterone injections. So on the one hand, he's saying everyone just eat healthy foods. Well, he can afford organic healthy foods all day long. Okay. So to the extent he talks about shit we've all known, he actually suppresses cytosol. He actually suppressed everything we've done when he was out there fucking up during COVID, telling people to get locked down. So he's a hypocrite. And we can do a whole, probably a talk every day on Booby fucking Kennedy to expose him, his family, and what they're really about. And we should probably have like a podcast 24/7, like CNN podcast running on the Kennedys, just exposing who the fuck they are and what they actually do. So I don't care whether he's done an upside down pyramid or downside. I think he should begin by talking about all the shit that he's taking himself. And is it that his so-called state of health, why doesn't he put a pyramid about what he takes? And you'll find out this common to all of these high-end health people, they're promoting something, but they themselves aren't living that. They're on serious stem cell therapy, hormone therapy, all sorts of stuff. Every year getting some type of plastic surgery done. So it'd be nice to see what they actually look like, So anyway, I can't take the guy seriously. And I could do a whole talk on him. And I have. I think I did 10, 15 videos on him. He got so freaked out, he had to do a blog page attacking me. So, Tracy Peters says, I'm understanding. Do you have a specific platform to place specific data for individuals be interested in these tests, or is this done by the Open Science Center, or will the individuals place their own data in this engine? So, Tracy, what we're doing is, depending on the service at the individual level, we do a statement of work, you send it to us, and we're doing it. Until our view is, until we understand how this all plays out, we want to be a little bit careful on who gets access to our platform as of now. That's the advice that we want to follow. But yes, but we can take data in and do that. In order to learn this type of program and its uses, how long is it coursework, or are there homework projects? This isn't growing your knowledge and using cytosol. How can we assist? Well, first of all, MuSIQ, the first thing I would do is learn the science of systems. And I think if she's in the program, Nicholas, you may want to reach out to her, Marianne or Barb. MuSIQ, she loaded something. But first thing is to understand system science, get a foundations. Okay, I think I answered all that. What else do we have? I think that's it. We do have next week, next Tuesday, a cytosol symposium coming up. You guys can find it. I think it's on heart health, if you're interested. We have some very cool models we've built on nitric oxide release, which is a very key indicator of vascular health. And then we can start looking at nutrients which support that. So I just want to leave you with this, that we have a very powerful resource. It needs to be supported. It's like we've built the manufacturing line for creating anything, and we need support. Support meaning we just need to put people on the ground who can do these analyses, which are good PhDs, but in different research areas, people can fund us. We just met a oral surgeon. He wants to fund our whole oral effort because he's found out most, his views, most diseases occur because the jaw size of people have shrunk over the last 100 years. Because people have the babies when they're born, the mothers don't let them suckle on their breasts with formula, and people don't chew, right? In the old days, people, babies were fed food, not this mush. So your mouth is supposed to be used, and it epigenetically changes. And his view is you don't even have to remove the wisdom teeth. All of this is new phenomenon. And the jaws are smaller, which affects airway breathing, which causes many, many diseases. So we're going to be working with him on showing the difference between nose breathing and mouth breathing, you know? Anyway, it's basically the world's our oyster with CytoSolve. We can go in many, many directions. All right, thank you, Barb. Thank you to everyone. Be well, and let's build this movement. But it's really up to all of us, you know? Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Shiva.
Yep, be well.
Thank you.
We have allowed our country to be taken over from within, and the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves, because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you, deep down inside them, that you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite working people. There's only one movement that can do that, and that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left wing, right wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train a army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up. Working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is a not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is a not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you on the left and the right. The Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you, the Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're going to follow on the left wing, Bernie Sanders. Oh, he said something, or Robert Kennedy. Scumbags.
or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement, and that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game, and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done. And it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own quote unquote people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhelp.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics, and I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people 2 years of MIT control systems. I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it. Anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I got to build a bottoms up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. And the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhelp.com, so people can sign in. They can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there, but we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhelp.com.
Welcome to VA Shiva. VA Shiva is a product of my journey across East and West, science and tradition, ancient and modern, that brings you the science of systems so you can become a force for truth, freedom, health. VA Shiva is a platform of revolutionary education, community building, and weaponry for unleashing local activism. My journey to VA Shiva begins in the chaos of Bombay, where I experienced diverse religions, languages, castes, and in a small village that had no running water, no electricity, where my grandmother, a poor village farmer, practiced Siddha, an ancient system of Indian medicine over 10,000 years old. She observed one's face, the art of Samudrika Lakshanam, to understand a body's unique constitution, allowing her to deliver the right medicine for the right person at the right time. Watching my grandmother heal others, I was inspired to study medicine, but I was also aware of the corrupt caste system of India, which denigrated a human being, where my family were considered low caste untouchables, where one's birth determined one's destiny. The grit and determination of my mother and father led them to get educated and to come to America, a one in a trillion event. Their actions inspired me to work hard and excel. While in ninth grade, I attended New York University in a computer science program, and subsequently, at the age of 14, was given a full-time job as a research fellow at what is now known as Rutgers Medical School in the heart of Newark, New Jersey. There, I investigated the system of sleep using mathematics, computer science, and biology for sudden infant death syndrome. It was there in Newark where I invented email, when I was the first to convert every feature of the physical, paper-based inner office mail system, including inbox, outbox, memo, carbon copy, blind carbon copy, attachments, into its electronic equivalent, a system which I named email, a term that I was the first to coin. On August 30th, 1982, I was awarded the first U.S. copyright for the invention of this system, recognizing me as the inventor of email. At that time, copyright was the only way to protect software inventions. I went on to MIT, where I earned 4 degrees across multiple systems of engineering, electrical, mechanical, design, biological. That training led me to invent many other systems for advancing humankind. Echomail, the world's first intelligent email management system. Cytosolve, a computational biology system for eliminating animal testing to discover new medicines faster, cheaper, and safer. And to the creation of a whole systems methodology for certifying clean food. These innovations led me back on a Fulbright to India, where I discovered the missing link between Eastern medicine and Western systems theory, honoring my grandmother, to develop Your Body, Your System, a powerful tool that will help you understand how your body is a system, and how the inputs of food, supplements, and exercise bring your body back to its natural system state. And Systems Health, an integrative educational discipline that is now integrated into the VA Shiva platform that will enable you to learn the science of systems, the science of everything, be it your body as a system or our society and politics as a system, to reveal the foundational interrelationships between truth, freedom, health. Now is the time for you to be the light. Learn the science of systems, build community, and weaponize yourself to unleash the activism necessary to deliver truth, freedom, health in your local community. Welcome to VA Shiva.